we're spending $2,000-$3,000 a day on ads, like in 30 days, you know, $100,000 that you can flow instantly 30 days by offsetting it onto a capital partner like Thirdco. And in where we were in growing and where we still are in growing, $100,000, that's like, it's huge. But you can take that and use that to grow the business. And like, that's literally what I've done every single time. We get in these growth phases where we bring in the work through advertising. Across the years of running ads, 2x is not good, but better than nothing. Yes. We get 3 or 4x is what we're comfortable with.
So first off, I really liked his discussion of Clearco as a source of non-dilutive capital, right? So he's not giving up part of his business, not giving up equity ownership in order to fund marketing spend for ad launch, which is great, right? Our job is to find companies like Robert and Tyler's that are healthy and growing well, and that need fuel for growth. And so we love to be that kind of capital.
So on this episode of the 2X e-commerce podcast, we dive into the dynamic world of capital management and growth strategies with insights from the innovative team at HatLaunch and Clearco.
This is the 2X e-commerce podcast, hosted by Kunle Campbell.
Welcome to this week's episode of the 2X e-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Kunle Campbell, and today we have an exciting discussion lined up for you. We'll be exploring the intricacies of scaling a business through effective capital management and strategic marketing. Joining us are Andrew Curtis, who is the CEO of Clearco, and Robert Hamm and Tyler Smith from HatLaunch. Robert is the founder and Tyler is the CFO and credit controller of HatLaunch. They'll share their invaluable experience on leveraging capital for growth, automating processes, and diversifying revenue streams to build a resilient business. So whether you're just starting or looking to scale your operations, this episode is packed with actionable insights you just don't want to miss, related to finance, accessing short-term finance to, and even long-term finance towards scaling up your e-commerce brand. Before I let you go, make sure you follow the 2X e-commerce podcast on your preferred platform to stay updated on future episodes and help us bring more interested guests on the show. Now, let's get into the conversation. This episode is a big one. We have three guests. We have Andrew Curtis from Clearco, Robert Hamm from HatLaunch, as well as Tyler Smith from HatLaunch. I just want to welcome you gentlemen to the podcast.
Thanks for having us. Excited.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Now, one of the reasons I wanted to record this episode was to get the full scoop of the HatLaunch story. Robert, I watched a YouTube video about your journey with HatLaunch, and I have to say it was very emotive. And there's a quote, I think it was from Mark Andreessen, who says, "You only ever experience two emotions in business, euphoria and terror." And I think that very much aligns with your story thus far. So I'm going to give it to you to essentially share your story with the audience. Thank you.
Started 2018, me in my basement. I started life as a software engineer, so I'm a programmer at heart, and you'll see on my shirt, it says delegate, automate, innovate. Those are the three things that I live by. Delegate is getting help. That was the first step I had to do to really start growing my business. But then to be able to scale it how we have over the past years, you have to automate things. And anytime there's a task or something that needs to happen from a person that you've delegated to, you need to automate the task as much as possible so that few amount of resources are needed to actually get that task done. And then innovate, that's where I'm in an industry that doesn't use much technology. And we are literally writing every single thing, every process that our business goes through for tracking inventory, getting an order through production, artwork management, customer service, the actual front end website where people order the product. That's all custom coded in-house by us, by me. And now I have a small team of developers with me too. But that's how I built the business. But with that comes needing capital, and you can't scale the business as much as I have from me in my basement 2018 for 45 employees and now a 60,000 square foot warehouse that we're renovating and moving into now without having access to capital. And that has almost been probably one of the hardest and most frustrating parts about this journey is finding the capital, securing it, and utilizing it for growth. And it's been in the trenches since day one, constantly looking, finding it. When I first started the business, we were using PayPal as our credit card payment processor, and PayPal actually had a working capital program where based upon your monthly revenues, they would extend you capital that would get repaid in a daily remittance. And we utilized that for the first 2 years. And at the height of that, we were actually taking almost $200,000 and repaying that in 3 months. And the fees there were anywhere from 7 to 10%. But we could get a chunk of capital that we could then use to buy equipment, inventory, hire staff, or actually expand physically our operations and our buildings. So that was our first go at getting a kind of a revolving line of capital that we could rely on. That kind of went into shambles when we switched payment processors, which funny enough, it was a payment processor that PayPal owns and promised us wouldn't cost the tissue, but it did. But it was a band-aid ripped off, and now we're no longer using their working capital, and we have a great banking local bank here that's helping us with over the capital as well. But to kind of offset that. But at the same time that we're utilizing PayPal, Clearco came along, and your product back then was a very similar daily remittance. It was an ad spend, typically like a card almost that you put the spend on, and you get pre-approved for a certain amount. And we were doing that, and we had PayPal working capital and Clearco going at the same time, firing on both cylinders, and it was great. Like, because you know, when we're spending $2,000-$3,000 a day on ads, like in 30 days, you know, the 100 grand that you can flow instantly 30 days by putting it on, you know, offsetting it onto a capital partner like Clearco. And in where we were growing and where we still are growing, 100 grand, that's like, it's huge. But we can take that and use that to grow the business. And like, that's literally what I've done every single time. We get these growth phases where we bring in the work through advertising. Across the years of running ads, 2x is not good, but better than nothing. Yes. But we get 3 or 4x is what we're comfortable with. And at that rate, we know our margins. We know we're profitable at a 3 or 4x ROAS of what we spend. And it's almost a dial that you can turn and bring more business in. Hard part for us is once we bring that business in, we have to afford actually physically growing the operation because we do everything in-house. So finding the people, finding the equipment, finding the space, and then through COVID, finding the, sorry, at first, I don't know if this is a PG-13 or a PG-13. I get emotional. Okay, it's very, very trying times. But through COVID, getting past that was almost impossible. And you guys were also doing inventory financing too at the time. So we were able to also utilize some of the capital for inventory financing, although most of it went towards advertising. But yeah, just remaining scrappy. We're still scrappy today. We're still, and that's why we're back in the wheelhouse with Clearco. We can take our ad spend and float it out. And yeah, granted, we do end up spending a little bit more on it, but you know, 6-8% is way cheaper than giving an investor a portion of my business. When we go from 1 to 2 million to 4 million to 8 million to hopefully 10+ million this year, hopefully more than that, but I don't really want to double the business again right now with everything going on. But you know, and you look at it through that lens, and that's how I always have to look at it. It's like, is spending 8% more on ads worth not giving away 10, 20, 30% of our business? And the resounding result of that is, hell yeah. I will do it all day, every day. And I don't want to give up my business. I don't want to answer to anyone else. I want us to do this ourselves. I will remain customer funded. I think it makes us a stronger business. We have to be scrappy. We have to execute. We have to use our capital in a do or die fashion and not waste it. And that's like, I could get on a tangent about what I think about venture capital and where a lot of the money goes and how much waste there is and how funny it is when a $100 million company goes out of business. It's not funny. It's not funny when business go out of business. But when you have that much money and you can't execute it, it's like, oh my gosh, guys, what are you doing? But that we can save that for a different podcast. We have to execute pinpoint with how we execute our funding because we have to. We can't afford not to. And having a partner that really understands and is lockstep with us and what we do and understands how we're different than anyone else. Like if another hack company came to you guys for capital, you need to know why Hat Launch is who we are, because we're not just sending hats out the door. We're more a tech company than we are a custom hack. And that's we approach every single part of this business with tech first. And we're still at the ground level with where this needs to be and where it's going, and having a partner to rely on for capital so that you can fund and execute that growth is extremely important. And it helps me sleep at night. And then about a year ago, I brought in my buddy Tyler here, who has financial experience, to be like, all right, buddy, here you go. Help me get some capital so I have to stop thinking about it and let me do the code and right now a construction project and get this thing running so I can focus on the stuff that I'm really good at. And it's thank God he's here. Thanks, Tyler.
Anytime. I'm glad I can shift that grief off your plate there and you can focus on what you do best and whatnot. So I don't know if we talked about the Lamborghini yet on the recording. I think that was pre-recording, but just kind of show like how
and
how we're very different. Robert likes to drive nice cars, Lamborghinis, Teslas. I've got a nice 2015 Chevy Malibu out in the parking lot right now.
Tyler,
a different mindset.
He texted me last night. He's like, you know what? I should be ordering my clothes from our distributors. I can get a shirt for like $4. I think I just bought my first $200 pair of pants the other day from Nordstrom. I don't shop at Nordstrom, but I did it. I used a gift card from our American Express account, but it's a whole way. The difference is
I'll get a nice $80 pair of jeans, but if I can get a blank t-shirt for $2 versus paying $20 at a retailer, then I'll do the same.
You want your finance guy to be frugal.
Right.
I've got him.
Right. I keep everyone on a level, you know, on swivel, off the swivel one. Yeah.
Exactly. That's my point. Exactly. You want him to be frugal, as frugal as possible. And no, thanks, Rob. That was really, really, really interesting, detailed. And it just is a really good way, precursor to essentially always finding a bit of leverage. This is a time leverage. You spend, you know, 100K plus on ads and you don't get to essentially pay it back till it's about 30 days, which buffers and you're paying, you know, 6-8% and you're essentially getting the required ROAS from the money. So your money is actually working for you, which makes sense. And I also love your concept around delegate, automate, and innovate, which sort of connects us to Tyler, because you've delegated finance to him. He's probably automating and innovating now in that respect. So Tyler, on to you. What did you inherit, you know, from Robert and how are you, you know, further sort of making it more efficient from a finance, you know, management
stuff? Solid accounting reports and whatnot, though we have a monthly P&Ls, balance sheet, cash flows, accounts payable schedules, like all the things that you'd like to see like in a robust finance department. Like it's something that I am trying to automate and integrate into this here, because I think it definitely paints a picture as far as how we're performing from a financial standpoint and how that goes hand in hand with our operation, with our advertising, all those things. I think it's a key crucial thing to have a very sound financial picture painted for Robert, for our other leadership group here, as far as how we're performing as a business. So, you know, that's something that I like to give myself a little credit for, is that that's something that I brought into here and helps hope to answer a lot of questions for Robert as far as what should we, you know, what should we allocate our resources to, what should we allocate capital to, and all the things and whatnot. Though, from the right get go, I mean, first thing was bringing on board like an actual bookkeeping system. So Robert had something that he had custom built because he likes to custom build everything into his website. And it was great because it told Robert like, hey, I was the least profitable this month. Like it didn't, I don't think it had everything built into there, but it got enough answered for him to know that he was doing things, he was on the right path or whatnot. But from like true, like, you know, GAAP compliance, all those things that we'd need to give to our bankers, our accountants for tax preparation, all that stuff, or didn't really meet that threshold really. So that's something that I have cleaned up a little bit. So, but I mean, he's a software guy. He did what made sense for him. And, you know, when you are building a business and doing everything, you're scrapping everything together, you're going to make do with what you have kind of thing. And so, and you know, that's why he brought me on, is to make sure that everything is financially sound and whatnot. So that's what I would say was step one, was getting everything really buttoned up, nice and neat, making sure that our vendors are paid on time, making sure that we have a good cash forecast. So that's something that, given that we are 100% customer funded, I have to be really on the dial as far as what our cash outlook looks like. And that's something that is great by utilizing ClearCo, is that I can finance these invoices and I know on a weekly basis what's going to be allocated from our cash towards those invoices, towards those payments. And yeah, it's great. Like when we were using PayPal working capital, that you just got this big chunk of money thrown at you and then you have a few months to pay it off. And then you have some few $100,000 that you can allocate towards down payment on equipment, hiring new staff, buying up on inventory, all that stuff. But if you don't have a proper working capital runway, and if something just comes up and you have to allocate all that cash right at once, that could really make things look really dicey, really shaky, really quickly. So by utilizing ClearCo, we're essentially like just kind of doing everything in tranches. Every tranche is just a little bit allocated bit by bit, where we're not taking a big overwhelming amount of sum of money to spread this all out and making sure that we're doing it as efficiently as possible. So.
Oh, thank you for clarifying the tranches in 90-day cycle.
In the past, it's been about 4-month cycles. That's where we'll get the best rate with ClearCo. Mm-hmm. However, just mm-hmm. by doing like some, you know, very basic math, we can stretch out those tranches over 5-month payment periods. And essentially every time that we mm-hmm. max out our credit limit with ClearCo, an invoice falls off, it then replenishes that amount, and we can kind of keep the cycle going and going and going. Whereas we don't have to worry about having to cough mm-hmm. up a bunch of cash toward paying those big invoices for our Facebook, Google, for our ad spending. So it makes it much more manageable for managing mm-hmm. cash flow and hiring staff and upping inventory and all that stuff.
Makes sense. And you're using it almost exclusively for advertising spend, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. And Facebook, Google, are those your primary advertising platforms, or do you extend to platforms
Facebook
like TikTok?
Google are two big hitters, but we run ads on Bing, we run ads on TikTok, we run ads on, we're not right now, but connected TV platforms, so we could see them on internet TV, but we haven't seen much of stuff there mm-hmm. yet. But we're, you know, we're about ready to start advertising on billboards, you know, just to see what happens. You know, because there's a whole other mm-hmm. world of advertising out there that's existed forever that I don't know it, but I only know online advertising and marketing. But there's $100 billion businesses that don't even run ads on Facebook or Google, you know, and we're going to start dabbling in that too. So mm-hmm. if you guys want to finance some billboards for us, we'll send you the invoice. But no, it's such a sure. huge world out there in branding, and it's fascinating. Like, as much as I love programming and that, I also love art, I love design, and I love marketing. So if you watch any of our videos, our advertisements that we've done, they're always quirky and dumb and funny, and that me and, like, at this point, Andrew at Monster Agency, who actually handles our ad buying and some of the creator, we come together, we think of these funny ideas for these commercials, and we do them, and I think they're hilarious, so I recommend that you guys check them out if you haven't seen them already, but they're on our website. But yeah, like the the marketing space in general is like, yeah, I want to throw up every time I think about how much money I've given to Facebook, but my business wouldn't be an almost $10 million annual revenue business if it wasn't for that platform to give people eyeballs on for our product. And I can't even imagine where we'd be without online advertising. And it's less than it's there because I don't know what my life would be like right now without it. I mean, I'd be fine. I'm a software engineer. I had a good job before I did all this crap, but it's, I've got my mom, I've got Tyler, I got a couple other friends that work for me. I've got 45 employees that now make great money. I think, you know, we don't pay minimum wage. We pay people well. A lot of great salaries come out of this place, and it becomes so much more than just a way for me to buy a green Lamborghini. It is truly something. And we have 35,000 small business owners across America that wear our products, that love our product and talk about it. And I could, it's such a, so humbling to see a customer, and especially, you know, I'm trying to do the YouTube thing to help other entrepreneurs out there. I'm just trying to be raw and upfront and offer this advice for free. And to see a customer comment, I think even on a LinkedIn about the Clearco article, someone said, not only am I excited that I got to buy hats for my business here, I also bought hats for my kid's business, and I can give him the gift of Robert YouTube videos showing him the journey of starting this business. And like, God, reading that, man, it just like, it takes me back. I mean, it's so much, bigger than just the business. And like, and so many things have happened where, and especially in the capital space, it's like, you get down to that, especially when you're at the end of that, especially like Tyler said earlier, you get that big sum of money, but at that 90, 120 day mark, you are on pins and needles and razor blades waiting for that next re-up to come in because you're growing and you're spending all of your money to grow. And the lowest you get. And that's where it's so great to have Tyler to help share that load, because with everything else that I have going on, when the finances get that tight, it is a lot, because, you know, my family relies on it and 45 other people's families rely on this business continually. It's hard, but it's all worth it for what we've built and where we are going and what we continue to build. It's what keeps me going. And I don't really know what the original question was, but that was my answer.
I think we talked about marketing
is great
and all that stuff. Yeah.
Great.
That's clear. Really, really clear. Thank you. I'm going to come back with the synergy between marketing and finance, but we haven't heard from Andrew Curtis, CEO of Clearco. Andrew, with what you've heard, you know, from Robert's story and Tyler's, you know, day to day, what are the macro trends you're seeing from Clearco's perspective on how predominantly small businesses, e-commerce businesses, you know, utilizing capital now in 2024?
Yeah, well, I think Robert and Tyler's comments touch on a bunch of things. Some were kind of broad themes and very specific themes around how they use our capital in particular. So I'll start high level, and in answering it, I'll cover your question about trends that we're seeing. So first off, I really liked his discussion of, you know, Clearco as a source of non-dilutive capital, right? So he's not giving up part of his business, not giving up equity ownership in order to, you know, fund marketing spend for hat launch, which is great, right? Our job is to find companies like Robert and Tyler's that are healthy and growing well, and that need fuel for growth. And so we love to be that kind of capital. These guys, I think their business is a little bit different than some of the businesses we fund in that they have a fair amount of capital intensive uses. And so they are buying equipment, and that equipment's expensive. And so they look at Clearco as a source of capital for a very specific need. And that specific need is marketing spend. And of course, a lot of our customers use our capital for marketing spend. I think year to date, 4 out of every $10 that we've advanced to customers has been used, you know, to pay Meta and Google. And so it's a very common way to use our capital. And I love the way Robert described it at the outset as kind of a knob or a dial that he can turn up or down, depending on his specific needs. Because these guys know when they spend dollars on Google or Meta, they know what the return will be. So they're going to get, you know, whatever, call it 3 to 5 times revenue for every dollar of ad spend. And so it's critical to their business. But then again, a lot of the things are critical to their business. They need capital to buy equipment. They need capital for shipping and freight and fulfillment. And so it's a complicated puzzle they're trying to figure out. And we love the idea of being able to solve a piece of that. And the piece of that is ad spend. And we also know by virtue of our analysis of their business that they're good at it, right? So they know if I dedicate a dollar to ad spend, it's going to generate X dollars of revenue. It's going to generate Y dollars of gross margin. And you heard Tyler talking earlier about the things he's been building in to have launched since he's gotten there. That's all we love seeing that kind of organization and discipline when founders are growing their business. So as far as kind of what we're seeing more broadly, what I would say is, the days of easy access to credit and days of cheap money are way behind us. And so we all know that we're living in a higher interest rate environment, and the Federal Reserve Bank in the States has tightened rates quite a bit. And so that creates pressure on all businesses, but it creates a lot of pressure for small businesses that are trying to fuel growth. So we love to be able to provide capital so that founders like Robert don't have to give up equity or ownership in their business in a more challenging rate environment. And so that's something that we see. Our founders are stretched in terms of finding capital, and they at the worst case, they may be kind of constrained or limited in their discretionary marketing spend. And they may be, they may be doing other things like stretching their payables, always in an effort to find a way to, pay their bills and fuel growth. And so the way we think about our product is, to Tyler's point, it's very discreet, right? You're using it for a discreet purpose. And when we fund an invoice, that invoice is, they pay us back over 4, 5, or 6 months, kind of like Tyler was mentioning. And they know exactly what they're using the capital for. And so I think that what we found with our customers is, there is the old model, which Robert was talking about vis-a-vis our old product, the old Clearco product, as well as PayPal, where you just get a slug of capital and you kind of use it as you see fit across a bunch of different purposes. The invoice funding product at Clearco is very specific. You have an invoice for Meta, you upload the invoice, we pay Meta directly. And then you pay us back over 4, 5, or 6 months. So we think it's a great way for customers to be able to plan better and to be able to manage their cash flow better, because they know exactly I can rely on Clearco to fund that invoice. And as soon as that invoice is funded, I know exactly how I'm going to pay them back over the next 4, 5, or 6 months. And that makes Tyler's job, I assume, easier, because he can better plan for cash management.
Thank you, Andrew, for clarifying. You said 4 out of every $10 is spent on advertising at the moment. Where does the remaining $6 $10?
So a lot of our customers use dollars to fund inventory purchases. Mm-hmm. So that's something that Robert and Tyler do less or not at all with us. They use us for a very specific purpose, which is ad spend. But a lot of our customers, they need to buy inventory, they need to buy raw materials, they need to buy finished goods, whatever the case may be. So in the same way that Robert and Tyler might upload an invoice for Google or Meta, other companies are uploading invoices for, overseas supplier XYZ, so that they can have product built or raw materials sent to them. And then the other category that's very large is just kind of shipping and handling and fulfillment. So that represents the bulk of our use or the way our customers use our capital.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. And then Rob, is your AdWords and Meta, set to essentially monthly invoicing? How to upload an invoice, essentially? You prepay.
2 years in, we got monthly invoicing access through Meta and Google. So yeah, they're all monthly invoiced at this point.
Okay. Makes sense. Now, this question is to to everyone in the panel, actually to Rob and Andrew. I'd ask Andrew to answer this one, which is, at what point, for listeners, this podcast, the operators themselves, some have begun their journeys, some are pretty advanced in their journey. At what point do you start to think, okay, I need to plug in, you know, invoice financing into my financial stack in order to fuel growth? This is to Andrew, and then I would just repurpose that to Robert afterwards.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be frank, I think most of our customers need as early as possible for us to be, like, for us to make an advance to a company. They have to have been in business for a certain period of time. We need to see a certain level of revenues. We ask them to connect their revenue platform account so we can actually see very granular detail on their revenues. And that enables us to provide them the best capacity or offer and be able to give them the largest number that we can advance to them. I think as far as like using the invoice funding product for discrete needs, I think you should and can do that as early as possible, because everyone has invoices to pay. Everyone has inventory mm-hmm. to fund. Everyone has ad spend to fund. So the thing I think what I encourage our customers to consider is the value of the ClearCo product in that sense of its discreteness, right? So I need to pay for something very specific. I can use a ClearCo advance, or I can use ClearCo capital. I can match that capital to that specific invoice or that specific funding need. And I know that ClearCo is there to fund future such inventory invoices or ad spend invoices. So I think it's something that comes early. And I think it's something that any founder that's growing a business and looking for fuel for growth can take advantage of.
Okay. Thank you. That's really clear. Rob, yeah. At what points would you suggest, because, you know, you guys are very unique in the sense that you had a fantastic product. You're marketing the product. Right. You're getting 3-4x ROAS.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Something
I think,
there.
You know, so, before you go start getting capital and doing that route, I would think there's a problem with a lot of businesses that don't actually know the numbers. So for one, I want to make sure my business is actually profitable. At where we are with our current ads and spending on ads, I mean, you could easily go light money on fire with that. And I would hate to have the safety net of knowing it's going to be paid for and not be profitable in my ad spend. So I want my ad spend to be painful to start so that I have to execute and make it profitable as fast and efficiently as possible. Whereas if you have a safety net, where that safety net will eventually get you in a hole that you can't get out of because you're funding unprofitable ad spend. So that's my only, you know, like caveat to taking invoice financing. But one other awesome thing about ClearCo is, in our case, there's no UCC filings against the business. So so we have a really great mobile bank partnership that they want first liens on the business to do all those things for us, to buy us this equipment. And, you know, anytime we go and find capital, it can't be, there can't be a lien on a business. And for listeners that don't know what a UCC filing is, it's basically just a lien against your business. Yep. And, you know,
yeah. It's like a charge, a business charge. We call it a charge on your business in the UK.
Basically, them owning part of your business is what it means. And for ClearCo to not require that is one of the number one things we ask anyone when it comes to getting capital. It's the first question. UCC filing. And if it's yes, like, I can't do it. I don't want to do it. You know, right.
Yeah.
And
I think that that's a great point. In the same way that we don't take ownership and we're not asking for equity from Robert, we're also not putting liens on his business and we're not asking for personal guarantees. Now, what that really means for us is we have to be very thoughtful.
That kind of goes back to my first point. You guys aren't even going to fund an invoice if you see their ROAS is 0.5, 0.3 ROAS, and all their financials are going down the toilet, right? So, but...
That's exactly right. Like I think we have built a very special mousetrap here that enables us to figure out exactly who's going to make the best use of our capital. And because we're not asking for equity and because we don't have liens on Robert's business, we have to be really confident that he's good at what he does. And he is, of course, but good at what he does means if he spends a dollar in marketing and he sends a dollar to Meta, then it's going to, you know, return $3 to $5 of revenue. So like, that's our job. And the way for Clearco to be in the best position to help all these founders in the world is to make sure that we're sustainable. And sustainable means we send dollars out, meaning we advance capital to businesses like Roberts and AdLaunch.
And that comes back. And it kind of, it goes back to my comment earlier about venture capital. Like, you can get a ton of money thrown at you at the very beginning, but if you haven't gone through painfully executing smaller subsets of capital and being profitable in that, you're just gonna have a hard time really becoming profitable. And that's like when you find a partner like Clearco, get in with them at the ground levels with great numbers, but know that it's gonna take time to build up. You know, you're not gonna get a $200,000 extension. You're gonna start at the ground level and they're gonna grow with you. And that's like what we've learned is like, you can't just go to a bank and ask for $500,000 because you promised them that you're gonna make it back. It's like, no, here's what I did with 5,000. Here's what I did with 10,000. Here's 50,000. Here's 100,000. And we can show that every time we've taken capital, we have taken it in, you know, sometimes doubled the business because of it. It's painful. It takes time, but that's business. And nothing in business, if you're doing it right and doing it correctly, is going to be, you know, like that. You know, nothing worth doing is easy. And there's no such thing as overnight success and overnight riches. And regardless of what the other guys in YouTube, I can tell you, but yeah, you need to know your numbers. And the second that you know those numbers and you know, and you have that dial, like we said, I know I have a dial on marketing. Once you feel that you're at that spot, that is really, that's like the, if you keep up with work, that's another thing too, is you don't want to go spend. I could go double our ad spend tomorrow and double the business coming in, but then the business would come crashing down with terrible reviews because we never delivered the end product. And that's another problem that people get in, is they get too much business if they can't possibly deliver on. See, that's another thing. Like, yeah, you go spend all this money and finance it and show great returns on it, but at 3 months out and you haven't delivered those things and those chargebacks come flooding in and you can no longer process credit card payments, your business is done. So it's a very, very, very tough orchestration, song and dance of just riding the waves. And that is, I'm not an expert yet. I'm getting better every single day at this. Literally done this myself from the ground up now with help, which is extremely, extremely important, is getting help. And also a partner with capital lending. And it's, I feel like we're really stepping into like the next phase of, we can rely on Clearco for our advertising spend. We know that locks up, and we have our local bank where we can do our Net30 and payroll capital there. And then, heck, maybe even Clearco, you guys start doing some inventory financing for us too. So, and really just, and that's what, every time I approach anyone, get capital, or I'm as transparent and open about our business as possible. One thing with our business being custom built, we aren't as easy to tie into. We don't have a Shopify that we can just go plop into Clearco's website, which would make the process so much easier if it was. But we're custom built, so we can't do that. So we have to do some manual sending of documents to show our financials and our orders coming in and out. But a lot of people e-commerce wise are using Shopify, using WooCommerce, all platforms that just easily tie into places like Clearco. But if like me or a custom platform, it's even harder to find that financing because a lot of the places out there are completely automated and they don't want to do the painstaking, send in the manual document, let us go hand in hand, lockstep with you and look at this to make sure that you're a fit for us. And thanks to Clearco for even doing that with us, because we aren't your typical e-commerce business that's running on a platform that others use. We're custom built. So
I didn't realize that Clearco also offered just custom integrations, which is quite good to know. Question for you again, Rob. I'm going to push it to Tyler right after that. How do you deal with platform volatility? So with Meta, you know, acting up, and it's more stabilized since like the pandemic times, you know, post pandemic. It's a lot more. We had someone who came on the podcast literally last week, and he's managed to scale his business from 14 million to, I think his run rate this year is 40M, and most of it is attributed to Facebook, you know, and so he's like, there's not much volatility. Right. So I'd like to get your first
hand. A lot of crying, therapy, enough. The start of this year was brutal, man. Facebook was brutal. And there's never a clear answer. That's what sucks, is you never have a clear idea. You have metrics. Mm. You can look at your metrics. You can look at all the metrics, right? And you can tweak and test. And sometimes it's like, it's not happening. And I think it's something that can be attributed to the economy and how it's going and the rate that we're talking about. But then you'll have 3 months of just like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. It's like for the first time ever, we might spend less on, we might actually stop spending money. You know, because we were at that time, thankfully we have 35,000 customers that, you know, it's kind of funny. We spent 5 years without ever sending an email to anyone. So we started doing like email marketing for once, 5 years later. Any person I tell that to, like, dude, you are an idiot. Like, and now I know why, because we were doing more repeat business than we were coming in from the ad spend. So think, you know, we have that leg to stand on now. But no, it gets tough sometimes, but you know, we are still 2.5x returns even through the bad times. So when I look at it that way, it's just like, you just gotta tighten the belt and push through the hard times. But it was 3 months of junk, and then boom, it just does it again. You're 3 or 4x. And you're like, oh gosh, okay, too much work coming in. How do we do? So it's volatile-ish. I mean, we're still profitable even in the bad times, but those good, the healthy good times is, and my Andrew, who actually helps us with our ads, is like, when it's good, you need to make sure you're eating. You need to make sure you're taking in what you can. But like my point earlier, you can't take in more than you can produce. It's what we do, right? You know, we're not just drop shipping stuff and relying on someone else to do this. We have physical people in a building physically creating products, custom products. Like, we're probably doing one of the hardest businesses there is, like with the custom side of it, you know, actually dealing with the customer hand in hand. You're 1,200 customers at any given point in time in our system that could be talking to us, emailing us, approving artwork, all of them, right? Where someone that's drop shipping product from a factory is like, they're just gobbling it all in and then sending the product out. Which I should probably look into doing that. That sounds like a pretty good business model. But yeah, it's crazy. It's a battle. You have to have your finger on the pulse of how the business is doing in the ad spend realm. And you can't just be complacent with, especially if you have a third party running your stuff, you need to be involved too. You need to be a part of it. You need to be making sure things are happening and executing and that your numbers are where they need to be. And like having Tyler looking at the numbers all day, every day, you know, I had a pretty good understanding of where we needed to be, but now we know even better. Like, what we can do if this happened, you know, if we get a 3.5% ROAS next month at this revenue, we have this amount of money that, you know, we can do this with. Where I didn't have the time to sit down and actually calculate that unless I had to. The only time I did financials outside of just the typical make sure we're profitable was when I had to submit them to get capital. So I would sit down on the weekend and do all of my financials for the past like quarter, which, you know, I'd stay up all night, you know, for freaking literally all night putting finances together so I could submit them to big capital. And having Tyler now to do that daily for me is better. So,
which brings me to my next question directed to Tyler, which is, how do you synergize with advertising spend, you know, on monthly cycles? is it, we speak about like cross-functional growth here in this podcast, but I want to get into the detail as to how marketing makes your job in finance easy or easier, and how you in turn make, you know, advertising easier, more predictable. What's that synergy like in
ad spending? It's always like kind of a sore point for me, because like Robert says, we allocate so much of our budget towards ad spending. I always bug him. He's like, oh, here goes Tyler again, trying to like figure out ways to cut down the ad spending. And usually that's usually during times when like the ROAS is terrible. Like when we're in the sub threes, it's like, all right, like I feel like we are burning money at this point kind of thing. Like we got, and that's something like I'm trying to kind of morph our business into. It's not just being so much an e-commerce business, but how can we mold this into other ventures where we're not so dependent upon our ROAS on what a profitable month's going to look like. So I hope I'm answering your question by like kind of going down this path.
Absolutely. So
like right now,
yeah,
we're looking to touch into other ventures on how we can continue to grow this thing without having to be so dependent upon how the e-commerce side looks at things. So, I mean, we have nearly 100 heads of embroidery on our house now, and what we can do is we subsidize as a decorator from other retailers throughout the country where they can get their products over from overseas in China and Bangladesh and Vietnam and all that stuff, and they can bring them here and we can decorate them where they don't have to eat such a high quantity of that product, of that specific design overseas, because their minimums are in the thousands of pieces where they have to have that same logo, that same artwork, that same size, that same color on that specific blank for the overseas manufacturer to fulfill that order for them. So they can get that blank piece of apparel, bring it over here. We can custom decorate for them in the few hundred quantities instead of a few thousand. So trying to mold this into more, we're more of a manufacturer, but also a e-commerce front to it as well, where we can diversify our revenue streams. And and by doing this, we do have to be very flexible with how we receive payment. So something that Clearco has really helped us, and Robert kind of touched on too, is that they don't have a lean towards the business. So we have a great relationship with our local bank. They have first lien on everything. We have a line of credit set up with them that I am trying not to touch because of knowing that we're starting to venture down to this path of partnering with bigger businesses who do work on a kind of schedule of paying their invoices, where we can do the bulk of the work for them and know that we're not going to receive that payment up front, and being able to withstand the cash flow until we do receive those payments. So it's because of utilizing Clearco that we can be so flexible and have that line of credit, you know, that safety net of that line of credit as well to utilize for this next phase of growth for us, is by bringing on bigger customers like this, where we're doing these larger scale projects for them and taking these larger invoices from them.
It's also like, I was just going to say, that's all kind of music to our ears, because it shows a lot of thoughtfulness and it shows diversification. And this is something we see it in different forms, but we like seeing it because it means people are being thoughtful, creative, and understand the risk of exposure to just a single part of the business. So I think we see that mostly around our e-coms developing wholesale revenue. So maybe they're developing relationships with large retailers, the Targets and Walmarts of the world, and that's helping them, you know, improve scale and diversity. Now, of course, to Tyler's point, need capital to do that, right? So, and we love being the source of that capital in whatever fashion, because any business that's trying to diversify in that way, they're going to have a working capital drag up front, and it's going to require capital. And again, it's the same old story. They don't want to give up their business. They don't want to give up ownership of their business. So we can be a partner to a business that, I think you've heard it again and again today, these guys are very disciplined and smart guys, and they have their eye on the ball. Like, we love customers like that, and we love to support them when they're trying to do different things to diversify and strengthen their core
and
business.
I look at it, you know, Tyler, his comment about, you know, let's pull back on ads. It's like, I have to see new business coming in. Like, yeah, getting like $200,000 of repeat business a month, that's a great number, but I have to see new people coming in for me to sleep well at night. I have to know the business is growing, because the business, if I'm not getting new customers, my business is not growing. And that I have to. So that's where ads will always be there. But we have to diversify. And like, even from the marketing front, getting into the more traditional terms of marketing, like we got to dabble in it. We've got to spend some money and see what happens. But we also have to venture off into these other legs of business. For if Facebook goes down tomorrow for 2 days, you know, that's a lot of revenue in just 2 days that's missing. You have to have these safety nets, these other legs of the bar stool that your business can thrive on. We need to know that we can, if Facebook and Google go down for a week, we can sustain, you know? And right now, I don't know. Andrew, don't mute me real quick. If Facebook and Google go down, I don't know, for a week, but no, but it would hurt really, really badly. And we got great business right now, so we're healthy, but no, we have to diversify and keep revenues coming in any way we can. And with what we do, we've created basically a machine that we can feed other. There could be another e-commerce business selling hats that just feeds us the orders, because I've built the machine to feed. And how we choose to feed the machine can be through ads, which I love. I love to kind of answer your question about like how does it feel knowing we're spending money on the marketing and getting the return of the business? It's like, I love that, because it's quantifiable. And you know, in the end, most of those people are coming back, and you're going to make that. Yeah, we spend 33% of our revenue on ads, but it's exponentially growing the pile of repeat customers that are then going out and talking about us and opening up doors and connections to feed the business through other aspects too. Like, the amount of times we've had a customer approach us about like, oh, well, you should start doing fulfillment for this, or you should start doing, you know, with perhaps for this company. And that has opened doors where it's different than what we're currently doing through our just normal TV ad, bucket order ads type thing. And opening us some very, very unique relationships that we have, and some really, really cool stuff that we're currently working on with some partners with us that we're going to take a lot of equipment to scale out, but you know, we're working on the building now to do that. But it's, you get to a point where you run the ads and you get to the $10 million in revenue, and it's like, yeah, we can get to $20 million in revenue on ads, but can we keep the ad spend where it's at and grow without spending more on it? And that's really what we're trying to do right now, because the more we can grow without touching the dial on ad spend, you know, that 33% revenue that's going towards ad, that converts directly to profit. And I can finally make some money.
I think the quantum leap there is the B2B relationships, you know, and getting those really big accounts and letting that sort of leverage and come back into ads, so the ads actually get more marketing efficiency ratio off the back of all the other advertising you're doing offline
and building and
relationships you're building out
brand
there.
Relationships. But,
you know, as exactly, as Andrew said, there's that gap, that working capital need at the start, which you need to sort of fuel to invest, but you need to get the right talent in place to really lead that B2B and ensure that you get somebody who's done it before to essentially get the ball running and you're onto something really big. I also like the point that you're looking at it as a platform. Yeah. You're looking at a hat launch as a platform, because if it's a platform, I know there's a jewelry platform, print-to-demand platform that essentially has an army of affiliates. Most of them are running Meta ads, bringing in business to them, and they're just essentially a manufacturing unit. You know, at the same time, they're still in their D2C, but it's all working really well. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure having everybody. Just wrapping up now, for people who want to learn more about your business, Hat Launch, it's hatlaunch.com. You do custom caps, fitted hats, and snapbacks. I'd also link to your fantastic YouTube channel. For ClaireCo, it's claire.co, invoice financing for the entire North America. Your Shopify merchant, e-commerce, you can just find out more on claireco.com. I'll link to both resources. in the show notes. Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. I didn't know how this was going to go, but somehow it feels like we rehearsed this several times before coming on live, but appreciate
it. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the 2X e-commerce podcast. We hope you found our conversation with Robert Hamm and Tyler Smith from Hat Launch and Andrew Curtis from Clearco insightful and inspiring. Their journey of scaling Hat Launch to a $10 million a year revenue business with non-dilutive capital highlights the power of strategic planning, automation, and innovative financing. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the 2X e-commerce podcast on your preferred platform. Your support helps us bring more incredible guests and valuable content to you. Don't forget to leave a review and share this episode with fellow entrepreneurs who could benefit from their insights. Until next time, please keep pushing the boundaries and growing your e-commerce business. Thank you for listening.